This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. Bait and switch for Katrina victims, and the murder of a Detroit rapper has some hip-hop artists calling for an end to black-on-black violence. Joining us today from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., Joe Davidson. He's an editor at the Washington Post, and Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer is also there. Nat Ervin joins us. He's professor for future studies at Wake Forest University, and he joins us from member station WFDD in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I welcome you all. Let's talk about one of the things that has made the news, and it's a quite interesting concept here, Joe Davidson, the idea that what we are seeing in Omaha is a state-sponsored, what some are calling state-sponsored segregation within the educational system. The state legislature there voted on Thursday of this week to divide Omaha school districts into three separate districts, one mostly black, one predominantly white, one largely Hispanic. The idea is to give those who are most vested control of their own district. Good idea?
Well, I think what we're seeing here is an attempt to deal with a desperate educational system in our city schools. I think that that this is a proposal that many people feel will be ruled unconstitutional because of a case many people have heard of known as Brown versus Board of Education, which outlawed segregated school districts. But let's say that doesn't happen or doesn't happen for a few years. I think this represents an attempt to deal with underachieving black schools, and it seems like it's almost like throwing a lifeline to a drowning victim. But I'm wondering if the lifeline is much too short and maybe it's even being thrown in the wrong direction. I think that schools in all of our big cities, certainly true here in Washington, have a long way to go to achieve really quality education, and I think this has to be seen in that light. However wrong-headed and backward many people might think it to be.
Nat Ervin, we've had this gentleman, State Senator Ernie Chambers, on the program, a maverick senator. His suggestion is there is no intent to create segregation, but the thought that those who have a more vested interest in their children will take care of the system more.
Well, the senator certainly is iconoclastic, and I thought the interview with you, Ed, proved that. He's certainly, this is not a man who doesn't care about his constituents, and he also cares a lot about this issue. But I just think he's just wrong-headed here. First of all, the assumption, and this is, he really taps into something that you'll hear from time to time. When black folks are just concerned about the way things are going, they will want to hearken back to the days as if segregation was a better time. The problem with that is that when you apply to education, the assumption is that for some reason we would assume that black teachers are the only ones who can teach black students, or that white teachers are the only ones who can teach white students, or that Latinos, Asians, etc. And everyone knows that theory is ridiculous, that you can learn from anybody and that there are some good teachers at any group, whatever. But here's a real issue I find problem with Senator Chambers' point. It lacks imagination. I mean, really, we're living in a global economy. We have all kinds of new types of tools. Instead of thinking of just redistricting the schools, maybe what he should be encouraging the district to do is to build 100 new, smaller schools. And forget about this old model of big as the solution. We need smaller schools. And just because you have, quote, black people who are going to be in charge of your education system, they may have bad ideas. What is important is the good ideas for trying to solve the problem, not that they come from black people or white people or Latino people. It's the ideas themselves, and this is particularly true when you're trying to solve problems of learning.
Tara, what of those who will simply say, the school systems across this country, the public school systems, are so bad, you might as well try something different?
Yeah. Well, we are, and that's called school voucher programs and charter schools. There are a lot of innovative ways that urban school districts have tried to improve the education system by self-imposed segregation is just turning back the clock. And it seems to me it just adds to the attitude of, why is it that minorities need their own school boards, their own people? I agree with Professor the professor that this is an attitude that we're trying to shy away from. And just because your own may be running these programs doesn't mean they're good. Washington, D.C. is a predominantly black city with a predominantly black school board. And the education system here is a disaster, because what happens is it's about bureaucracies. Bureaucracy begats bureaucracy. And what this would do is this would create three more little bureaucracies. Just a quick background about how this came about. This wasn't initially proposed this way. The Omaha public school system wanted to integrate some of the more white suburban school districts within the city limits of Omaha. I think because of No Child Left Behind reporting issues, they wanted to absorb these school districts to boost the output of positive numbers in their school district. Well, it wasn't until Senator Chambers came in and proposed a two-page amendment that said, you know what, we need to just break it up, and since our schools are segregated anyway, let's do it this way. And I think it was a mistake on the part of the governor and the 33 lawmakers who voted in favor of this to do it, because it seems to me like it's an easy way out. It was an easy way out for them to say, well, it's their problem, let them handle their own. And I think that's a dangerous precedent.
All right. Well, we should note, as a programming note, next week we'll be taking a closer look at this, doing a piece and having a more in-depth conversation about the breakup of the school district along racial lines. All right. Let's turn our attention to low-income Katrina victims who are having issues. And this is just one of those instances, Nat Irvin, that people were concerned about. This out of Gulfport, Mississippi, an apartment complex which announced that their tenants had to move out because the storm-damaged apartments were inhabitable. 5 months later, reopened, and now they are, in fact, condos. And the people that were displaced are shocked and dismayed, to say the least.
Wow. You know, the bait and switch. You know, this is the clear example of where the free market does not work well. And if ever there was a time when you needed your government on a local, a state, and a federal level to come to your aid, this is the time now. This is the time when people are at their tragedy. You know, when you have a situation like Katrina, and we already know this, it brings out the best in some folk and it brings out the worst in some folk. It also shows the strength of our systems and the weaknesses of our systems. And this is an element where I just, frankly, I'm sickened by it, because you know that poor people are being hosed, and you know there are very few resources for them to turn to. And I'm just hoping that somebody's going to step forward with leadership and say, look, we understand when you have to repair your condominiums or when people have to repair their property, that they are entitled to recover the investment and they're entitled to make some profits, no question about that. But there's got to be a way for the federal government or the state or local government to come to the aid of the folks who have, through no fault of their own, now found themselves without any place to live. If a government can't help you now, what the hell good is a government?
All right, but Joe Davidson, it's the good old American way as an entrepreneur that I am now turning lemons into lemonade. I had destruction here. Now I've had the ability to remodel these apartments, do them up a little better, and perhaps bring in a clientele that can pay me a little bit more money. Should I, in fact, now have to bear the burden for those who lived there before?
Well, I think you have to do that in accordance with the law and basic standards of human decency. And I think that in terms of the law, according to news reports in Mississippi, in Louisiana, I'm sorry, there have been 450 complaints of house-related price gouging that the government there is investigating, and some 20 cases in Mississippi that the Mississippi Attorney General is investigating. So this isn't just so if we have house price gouging at that magnitude, then clearly this isn't just a case of a landlord remodeling the house and trying to get a little bit more money because of the new additions or whatever. So I think this is a situation where it does require very close monitoring by the government to make sure that people, low-income people in particular, are not being unfairly evicted and simply cheated.
Well, this is another case where, even though I'm a free market person, I think we're dealing with a state of emergency here. And it is unfair. And in this case, price gouging, it's rental price gouging. There's actually no law in the state of Mississippi that includes rents. There's laws against price gouging in other areas, but not rent. And there's actually going to be a bill introduced in the Mississippi legislature that will close that loophole. So these tenants will have some form of recourse. And Mississippi also allows for rent increases due to repair costs and things like that, but that's within reason. Like the state of Florida, for example, they with their experience with hurricanes, they have laws in the books that protect people from this type of price gouging as well. And I think that everyone has to understand the magnitude of this disaster. No one was prepared for, and everyone now is trying to take advantage of, you know, it's almost a survival of the fittest. Well, what can I do to survive? The landlords are saying, well, you know, we don't want to take federal subsidized housing vouchers anymore because we can, in the rebuilding process, we'll be able to make more money. Well, maybe at some point that will be appropriate, but right now we're still at a point where we're dealing with the disaster that displaced more people than the Civil War. So it's a learning curve, and unfortunately some people are on the shorter end of that, but there are plenty of advocates that are down there protecting Katrina victims, and I don't think that the government will allow this to continue.
All right. Let's turn our attention now to yet another high-profile murder of a rapper. This Deshaun Holton, known as Proof, was killed in Detroit. His funeral was held on Wednesday. He was known as Eminem's right hand in the group D12, which Eminem oversaw, if you will. 50 Cent, Dr. Dre, and others attended the funeral. But here's the interesting point. There were calls, particularly by Detroit rapper Obie Trice, who had been shot in the head on New Year's Eve in Detroit, calling for black men to stand up and finally take a look at the violence that they are perpetrating against each other. How long can we continue to watch this go on as a community and, quite frankly, and I say this, all of us, stand idly by and see young black men continue to kill themselves over really absolutely nothing?
Ed, I don't know. I really don't. In fact, I have written about this issue for the last 15 years. I, along with several other people, when I was reading our story today, thought about C. Dolores Tucker and how she tried to bring this just with all of her passion to warn us about this insidious disease that had gotten within the culture. And people just turned a blind eye, just seemed to be willing to celebrate the foolishness that was being propagated as art. And so now here we are. We've got a disease that is running rampant, and it has debased women. It has debased young men. It has caused the loss of fathers, uncles, cousins, children, done untold damage. But what happens is we've got a part of our community that will not come to grips with the damage that this particular industry is doing.
Well, but not
and
just a part of our community, though, Nat. Don't you think our entire community understands that or feels that way? The idea that even those of us who decry the idea of this being insidious and problematic perhaps have not done enough to stop it.
Well, it may be so, but I don't know what I tell you this. I don't know. All I can tell you is that we talk out of both sides of our mouths when we talk about violence in the black community, because even in the funeral, we glorify the death in such a way that it looks as if somebody, a heads of state, had died. You know, it's just something insidious about this whole thing. And so to answer your question, maybe after about a half million more young black men were killed or died, I don't know if it has to be that high, maybe then something would happen to the rest of us that would change fundamentally this notion that we have that every time somebody gets behind a microphone or sells a record, he or she has something to say. They don't. Have to say a lot of times is trash.
Joe, I'm not sure why the community on a whole feels so impotent. There are certainly those who stand up and preach the ills of what has been going on with this culture. But as a community on a whole, we have allowed this to happen and unfortunately, again, on a whole, stand idly by.
Well, I think that there's some sad truth to that. I guess I also want to say, though, that hip-hop is not by definition violent and sexist, and I'm not a particular hip-hop fan, but it's clear that it doesn't have to be the way it is, and not all of it speaks of violence.
Right. By no means, but there is an element of gangster rap that is.
Well, you certainly cannot deny it. You certainly cannot deny that. And it's interesting. I was reading a piece in the Windsor Star, Windsor being the Canadian city in Ontario right across the river from Detroit, and Proof talked to a reporter, a writer there last October, and he said, you know, there's only so much drugs you can sell. There's only so many people you can kill. Me, I'm trying to bring the art form back in line. And this business of bringing the art form back in line, I think, is crucial. Does it take the death of Proof to do that? It's probably going to take a lot more than that, because clearly he's not the first rapper to be killed. He's not even the best known rapper to be killed by a long shot. So this isn't going to do it.
He shot somebody himself, Joe.
Terror with about a minute.
That was part of it.
Terror with about a minute.
Well, you know, I find it awfully hypocritical that it's 50 Cent and Eminem and that group who've made millions and tens of millions of dollars promoting violence and talking about, Eminem talks about killing his wife and everything else. And yet now, because it hit home for them, it's like their own selfish interest where they recognize that because there is a hunger for this type of music, which we can discuss all day long, they exploited that and they made millions of dollars on it. But now, because it hit them, now all of a sudden they're calling for change. Are they going to give the money back that they earned off of this garbage? You know, are they going to stop making records? Are we going to hear no more violence and no more advocacy for this type of pimping and drug behavior? And calling women all kinds of names, are they going to stop making records like that? Are we now going to embrace Bill Cosby and what he says when he points out that this type of culture is killing us? I'd be very interested to see that. We've accepted.
Or that being said, too,
mediocrity.
let us put it on our plate too. And are we going to challenge or stop our children from buying that kind of music who are under 18? I mean, there's a lot that can be done on all sides.
Absolutely. We've created.
And I think that we all have to stand up and take heed to that. All right,
you can challenge.
We get off the soapbox. Tara Settmeyer, Joe Davidson, Nat Irvin, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it.